In today's episode, we're going to talk about money. The way we earn, save, and spend money is incredibly relevant when it comes to talking about discipleship and faithfully following Jesus. With our executive pastor, Jordan Scott, as our guest, Mary and I delve into a passionate conversation about money and our faith. The conversation was too good to cut off, so we've split the episode into two parts. This episode will primarily focus on personal financial stewardship, but be sure to catch our next episode, which is a continuation of this conversation, where we focus on corporate financial stewardship as a church family. We'll talk about our church budget and bring you into our budgeting process a bit too. We also have a theological conversation on the importance of radical giving. We hope you enjoy both episodes. Welcome to another episode of SDBC Podcast. Today, Mary and I are co-hosting a special guest, Pastor Jordan Scott, our executive pastor at South Delta Baptist Church. Thanks for joining us, Jordan.
Thank you. It is great to be back up on the podcast. I had noticed it had been a while. I believe the last episode I was on was our church draft episode, where obviously by congregational vote, I destroyed you. Maybe that's why I wasn't invited back.
I don't remember it like that.
I did have a newer person to our church who's been here last few months, I think. And he came up to me at a church lunch and said, "I like Pastor Jordan's list better than yours."
Just out totally of out of context.
I'm like, wait, wasn't this episode like last year? But no.
I also noticed that we say special guest pretty much every time. So I feel like now we just got to stick to it, because now if we start just saying guest, yeah, we're singling people out.
Well, Jordan is a special guest and we do have a special episode. He is our executive pastor. This isn't the only reason why we have him on for this episode, but we are going to talk about money and giving and budget and stuff like that. Not just the church budget, which we will talk about, because I think church budgets are important too. And Pastor Jordan, if you don't know this about our church, Pastor Jordan does a lot of work in preparing the budget to be presented to our elder board and then to our congregation at large at our business meeting in November as well. So we're like right in the thick of budget season right now. So our staff is really, and our elders are thinking about this, praying about this, and talking about this a lot. So it's on our minds, which is why we decided to do an episode on it. But also we want to talk about personal finances and stewardship and personal budgets, and kind of want to share what we do, maybe our ways and tools that help us to stay faithful, but also maybe some of our failures that we have learned from. So just wanted to have a conversation, both theological, personal, and as a church family as well. So Jordan, mm-hmm. We're excited to have you for this episode. You bring a lot of expertise and this is an area of interest even in your home and family life, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, the reality of when it comes to budgeting is that ultimately it's a tool that's a reflection of stewardship, how we understand that everything that we have is from God and is God's, and then how we want to leverage that for his kingdom purposes. And so, you know, I also enjoy budgeting. I'm one of those people, right?
Do you have a lot of spreadsheets?
In fact, I do. But you know what? In today's modern world, there's tons of cool apps as well as online resources that really are perfect for people from all sorts of different backgrounds when it comes to budgeting, whether it's new for you or whether you're an expert budgeter and you've had a system your whole life, lots of tools out there. So I enjoy always exploring. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm one of those people. I enjoy budgeting.
Yeah, I mean, in our current sermon series, we're going through the book of John right now. And my next sermon this coming Sunday, and actually by the time that this episode is released, it would have been last Sunday, I guess. I'm going to be talking about giving and money, because the Bible actually talks a lot about mm-hmm. money, especially in the Gospels and in the book of Luke as well. But just all throughout, there's principles of stewardship financially, materially, but also just our time and everything else as well. So today, maybe we can start the conversation off with just a broad topic of the importance of budgeting and financial stewardship. I think, like I said, the Bible talks about it a lot. I enjoy, actually, some pastors don't, but I enjoy preaching about texts that talk about giving, because it's such a tangible thing that we interact with every day. All of us, no matter how young or old, we're impacted by our material goods, mm-hmm. how we earn, save, spend, what we think about it, whether we're enslaved by it in some cases or not. So this is a topic that all of us can resonate with. So today we're going to talk about our faith and the Bible and money and how it informs our view of money. So we'll talk about the healthy relationship with money, but also maybe unhealthy ones as well. So listeners, if you are interested in this topic, keep listening. But also if you feel convicted as you listen, please don't feel like this is just a burden on you that you have to carry alone. One of the things we'll talk about later is that we have a community of followers of Jesus for a reason. We are called to help each other with this. I know our culture tries to tell us that, you know, this is a private affair, so you shouldn't talk to other people about it. But I think there's healthy ways to do this as a community as well. So if you're feeling burdened by this, please reach out to us. We'd love to support you and help you. If you feel convicted, if you feel a change is needed in your financial life, we would love to help you. Not as a financial advisor, because full disclaimer, we're not financial advisors, but as people who try to follow Jesus faithfully and biblically, we'd love to speak into your life and listen to you as well as we engage in this very important topic. So, Mary, can you start us off?
Yeah, I'd love to, because I actually have a question that I want to shoot back at both of you guys. But as we talk about this, as I've thought a lot about it, as I've read a lot about it in the Bible, we've talked about it as a church, it always comes up when talking about money that it can often be like such a taboo topic or something that we don't talk about or we don't know how to talk about. And I was listening to one podcast where they actually put it this way, that almost 50% of all the subject material that Jesus talks about in the Bible has something to do with generosity or money. And so I just think it's such an interesting, almost irony or juxtaposition that Jesus talks about this so much in different ways and so freely for different situations and different people in different situations. But we can sometimes feel, I think, hindered by its taboo nature. And so I was just going to throw this question back out at you guys, but why do you think that it is that way? Is it like a Western thing that we've just become so independent and so private-minded that this is how we talk about money? Is it a church thing? Is it just how the Western church has grown? Like, what do you think? Why do we think that it can often be such a taboo topic?
I mean, I think initially, I think it is a Western culture as well, and also a modern culture thing, because you know, in the biblical times, the walls, like literally the walls of the houses weren't as kind of soundproof and secure. And privacy was much, much, much less of a concern at that time. If you had a fight with your spouse, like chances are your whole community knows about it, right? Whereas now it seems like anonymity is something that we somewhat value in society, maybe to a fault, maybe. And privacy, I remember, Mary, you were kind of just coming on to our church back then, but our previous lead pastor and executive pastor were both Americans, and they found the desire for privacy in our kind of West Coast Canadian culture to be a little bit of a culture shock for them. Like when we are ill, we oftentimes just kind of keep it to ourselves. And again, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but it just happens to be our cultural kind of bend. I think not everyone, but many of us tend to be more private than our American counterparts and also many other parts of the world. We talk about communal kind of emphasis of a society versus individualistic. Right. And we definitely fall on one of the most individualistic cultures in the entire world. Many researches and studies have shown this. So
particularly the Pacific Northwest, right?
Yes, Pacific Northwest, and in Canada and in America, North America in general as well. If you compare it to Latin America's, Africa, Asia, they tend to be a lot more communal, even Europe to a certain extent. So I do think this is a Western, but also maybe even more so a North American cultural context. And I do think we've kind of taken it a little bit too far to make a lot of these things taboo. And it's not just money, it's also sex. It's about a lot of topics that we find awkward talking about, we just end up saying, let's not talk about. Anything to add, Jordan?
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple things. One, maybe stemming from your idea of just how individual we are, how private we are, that kind of leads to maybe less of a communal approach to theological positions when it comes to giving. Like, as you may have prepared for this podcast, right? Like, there are so many different ideas regarding finances, whether it's individual or even biblical principles regarding giving. So I think that that can then lend itself to potential conflict and confusion. And so it's important to teach on healthy giving and finances, but then often maybe outside of that formal time of teaching, it does become a bit more challenging for people to navigate.
Yeah.
And people in our culture are passionate when it comes to these topics.
Yes.
And so because of that, often people will be maybe more invested in certain conversations. And I think money is one of the big ones because it is personal.
Yes.
And so therefore it can lead to maybe conflict that people don't feel comfortable engaging with, right? Yeah. I am a conflict-oriented person. So I love conflict conversations because I think that's healthy, but I am probably not a reflection of the majority of people, right? So I think that's part of it. And then stemming into that is, I think that certain people, when it comes to whether it's giving, money, finances, it can be a confusing topic, yes. right? Like just some people, their minds aren't geared for it. And so because of that, it's a topic that maybe they don't feel comfortable engaging with,
yes.
right? And so they kind of stay by the wayside and don't necessarily want to engage. So I think that's also part of it as well.
Yeah. I think that's why it's cool that we have this platform on the podcast to be able to talk about things like this, because it's more informal than a sermon. And we're like sharing these personal details of our lives too. So I think that's one of the ways that we actually can combat that taboo nature of the topic. So yeah, just in starting us off on this topic, I think it's great that we're even talking about it in this format and being willing to show, you know, how we do finances here at the church, how we do it personally, how we do it collectively. And so, yeah, I'm excited about this topic. Yeah,
absolutely. So back to the question.
Yes, back to the question. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Well, what I was just going to say is just reminding myself, reminding all of us, like actually how much of Jesus's teachings is about generosity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have Matthew 6:21 that says, "For where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be." In verse 24, it says, "No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money." And so it's interesting how even back in a more collectivist culture, how these principles were just as needed as they are today, even though we just talked about how individualistic we are here, how money and generosity has always been a problem, always been potentially the root of a sin problem or our pride problems. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just good to start the topic off knowing that Jesus, the Lord and Savior that we serve, he's someone who did talk about it a lot and did acknowledge both its importance for kingdom and kingdom work, but also its powerful ability to bring us down and show the very depths of how sinful we can be. And so, yeah, so I love asking the question of, if Jesus talks about it so much, why don't we? So yes. I love that we are being able to talk about it. But I think it's something that is particularly interesting in relationship too, because even I think about Phil and I's relationship and relationship with money, and we both came from different families.
Phil, your husband.
Phil, my husband. Yes, sorry. Phil, my husband, for those who might not know. But we come from different families who have different views on money. So it's not even like when we came together, we had to develop a theology for our own. We did, but we also had to like teach each other our family of origin. And is this something we want to keep, or is this something we want to change? How do we do it? Because, you know, we don't want to just do the exact opposite and then insult our families on how they've been doing it and all of these different things. So, yeah, but I think that as we talk about it, it's so crucial to remember both the incredible that impact that money can have for kingdom and for good works, but also the incredible demise that it can have when we let our almost our deepest selves decide what to do with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Matthew 6, the verse is one of my favorite verses, right? Where your treasure is, your heart is also. Mm-hmm. I think it really shapes our understanding of what discipleship looks like. I just preached on this last week, but moving from self to self-sacrifice is one of our kind of tenets of loving like Jesus, what that actually looks like when we mature in Christ. And I think money is really a part of discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
It's training our hearts through this very tangible aspect of interactions financially and materially, that we could train our hearts to be selfless instead of selfish, supportive of God's mission in this world and devoted to it rather than just our own personal agendas. I have always often said in sermons and stuff, like, if you really want to know if you are faithfully following Jesus, does that show up? Your loyalty to Jesus, your following of Jesus, does it show up in your calendar and in your bank account? And if it doesn't, then perhaps it's not lining up. It's not actually translating into transforming your life. I think it's a really important aspect of our discipleship, which is probably why Jesus talks about it so much, especially in the book of Luke. The more I study the book of Luke, Jordan, are you doing Luke with one of the newer people who are exploring Christianity? Is that the book you're going through?
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. We just read through chapter 12, which is the corresponding part of the gospel that you have in Matthew, where Jesus talks about the same thing in Luke chapter 12. And it's really, really relevant, I think, to this conversation. Yes. Now, it's not necessarily explicitly about giving, but it's woven in terms of how we live our lives. And so, yeah, Luke definitely does talk a lot about it, because it's woven into, I think, most fibers of what it means to be a person and yeah. live.
And so on that note, maybe I could read a couple of verses here as well. Luke 14, Jesus says this as a part of a story that he's telling. For which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Now, this isn't particularly, I don't want to take the text out of context. This isn't talking about budgeting or personal finances, but it does kind of raise a good point. Jesus is saying, hey, when you're trying to build a tower, wouldn't you kind of count the cost beforehand and then know what you're heading into and then work on the project? Otherwise, people would mock you. He's not saying mocking is a good thing. He's not supportive of that kind of stuff. But what he is saying is it doesn't make sense that you're not counting your costs, not budgeting. Like, there's different ways for people to budget. You can count every penny, or you can be a little bit more broad in your budgeting. I'm not saying that one way is the only way to do it, but I think not having a general plan for finances, I think, would be viewed as folly, and some proverbs would talk about that. But one of the things I've kind of learned was, you know, in this particular text in Luke 14, it's talking about discipleship in general, right? He's trying to make a point about discipleship. There's a cost to us following Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I think we too often make that cost abstract, right? We might be mocked because of our loyalty to Jesus, which is true. There are costs like that. There might be relationship costs that come because we follow Jesus. But really, there is a material cost too. There is definitely a financial cost to following Jesus faithfully. And I think Jesus doesn't shy away from talking about it. In fact, he highlights it, not just in the book of Luke, but in the whole Bible. He wants us to make sure we understand that we're not slaves to money, but that we have mastery over it. And this is why it's so important for us and exciting for us to talk about this on this platform and in conversations. Jordan, I know you have many conversations, and you do too, Mary, with others, your friends, other people from church, and even people who are not Christians. We have these conversations about money, and we don't necessarily shy away from it because we believe it is important for us and healthy as a community to talk about it.
I think another thing that just the topic of finance, especially personal finances, brings up a lot is, to a certain extent, what we actually believe about God and the nature of God. And we talk about this a lot. I know you've talked about it in sermons, but that scarcity versus abundance mindset in the zero-sum game. And I find a lot when we look at our finances, or even not consciously, but when we look at where money is actually going, we're like, is this a reflection that we believe God is a God of abundance and that he's taking care of it, and it's not a zero-sum game? There's actually ample to go around. Or is it showing that we have this scarcity mindset of keep everything in, and like bury your nuts underground and like a bunch of squirrels packing everything away? And so I think though we can just sometimes brush money off as like a business thing or a thing on the checklist or a task to do, it often reveals so much about where our hearts are and even what our belief in God is. And the same podcast I was listening to said it like this. They said that our problem and our anxiety isn't often or always a lack of resources. It's a lack of the mindset that God can actually be trusted with our resources. Mm-hmm. And so I, studying this in order to do this podcast, like I was convicted about a lot of things, because a lot of decisions we just make flippantly about money have the power to also reveal a lot more what's going on inside of us.
Yes, discipleship. I actually also like the idea that when we submit to God in our things, like oftentimes in our church at least, we talk about the dangers of prosperity gospel, that, you know, if you give to God, doesn't mean all of a sudden an anonymous person is going to write a check for $20,000 and, oh, this is how it works. You give to God, God gives you double. It's not like a casino where we're gambling, right? But because we speak against it, because we think that's an unhealthy and incorrect theology, sometimes we go too far and act as if God is a God of scarcity and that he can't ever provide, right? Mm-hmm. And that all he's seeking is our money. And that's what he desires from us, that we would slave away and be productive, and that's all he values. That's also not true. So I think it's important for us to continue to talk about God's provision and in a healthy way, even in times of what seemingly looks like scarcity, right? So anyways, I'm very excited to talk about this, but why don't we delve into the more practical side as well? We're going to continue to talk about the theology of this, but even practically, Jordan, maybe you can start us off here. I want to talk about the importance of personal budgets and planning, and, you know, as a family, as an individual, What does that look like for you, and how do you practice that?
Yeah. So, you know, once again, that bigger concept of stewardship, right? That everything is God's and that he's essentially invited us in, mm-hmm. To being co-laborers in what he's doing in the world. You know, that concept applies to, you know, our corporate church finances. I think it also applies to us individually. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for our family and our family context, kind of the starting point for us, and it's actually very similar to the starting point for the church, is just kind of thinking about personal budget, personal financial stewardship as the real vehicle of living out our family mission and vision. And that through the blessings of what God has provided us, you know, how do we want to go about doing what God is calling our family to do as gospel proclaimers in a way that provides us with clarity and focus, yes. right? In terms of us growing as disciples and not being distracted maybe by a lot of what the world might want to pull us to.
Yes.
So I think in that context, establishing a healthy budget means we get to joyfully pursue the kingdom goals God has for our family. That's kind of the, you know, big picture idea of, I think, how we try to think of that personal budgeting and personal stewardship piece that then leads into some more practical yeah. kind of components.
So do you keep like a spreadsheet, or like what is your go-to tool? Or
oh, Paul, how much time of our podcast do we have? Yeah, no, I've adopted my own kind of a spreadsheet right now. It's very colorful. It's got kind of the buckets and categories that I like and make sense. That's then attached to some different kind of accounts or funds that we might have. Just a disclaimer, I don't do the envelope system. For those of you that do, wow, fantastic. That's always hard for me. But I try to conceptually maybe do that, if that makes a little, for those of you who are conceptual thinkers. And so when I say funds and accounts and places where money goes, that's kind of what I'm referring to.
So sorry, for those who don't know the envelope system or the jar system or whatever you want to call it, I think it's maybe easy to understand it as you don't spend money that you don't have, right? So you put cash into an envelope or into a jar. And that's your entertainment jar, that's your food jar, that's your grocery jar. And once it empties out, it's done.
Yeah.
With credit cards and other kind of formats, lines of credit and other, people could easily go into uncontrollable debt, especially if you haven't learned the discipline of financial stewardship. So this kind of system really helps you. It's a tool to help you to stay within your means, right? So I get that you're doing it conceptually and not literally, but I know a friend who is actually a very, very financially very wealthy person and very down to earth and humble about it. But he doesn't struggle with this. But when he got married, he learned that his wife actually hasn't developed the same kind of discipline. And in order to help her out, they as a family entered into doing the envelope system.
Which is fantastic.
I think it's fantastic, right? Yeah.
It is a good, because it's a very concrete way of holding yourself to it.
Yes.
And I think that's the key thing, right? And, you know, this even maybe jumps a little bit ahead. But really, the when we talk about budgeting as a tool of stewardship, and yes, financial stewardship, but really stewardship in general of all that God has given you, budgets are an accountability tool, right? They're holding you to that mission and vision that God is calling you to. Now, in this case, a personal context, but also us as a church, right? So the envelope system is a fantastic way of embedding accountability into it, right? It's very hard to deviate from that. And when you do, you know.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point. You're doing it as a family. So I'm assuming your children are a little bit too young to enter into very deep conversations about it, other than, hey, your berries are cut off this week. It's getting too pricey. But I understand you and Christiane, your wife, would be constantly, I would imagine, having conversations around this.
Yeah. I mean, so I wrote down kind of a list that I think, in terms of practical flow, like starting out with just writing out what maybe some big goals are for the season. I know some people write it out every month. Some people do seasons, year plans. We like to do it more like seasonally. Mm-hmm. So writing out what are some bigger budget goals that might deviate from your normal day-to-day expenses, or whether it's ways in which you want to give to the church or ways that you're investing money. Then using a spreadsheet. Once again, there's fun, easily accessible tools online that aren't spreadsheets if that's not you. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, communication would be the third one, is just constantly talking about it. And not only with each other, but also just being open to following people as advisors, right? People that you trust, reputable people.
Yeah.
And then I think that that then starts to demonstrate to you really the power of budgeting, which is creating margin,
yes.
right? Which then gives you space to then giving generously, yes. right? Which then this might be more so for me, but something that's really important is always just kind of living below our means in order to then leverage more for the kingdom. And I don't mean that as like a convicting, hey, if you're not living below your means, it's just that's been something that's been a constant in my life. Yeah. And Christiane has almost kind of been forced into that direction, not like without any conversations or anything. Yeah. So some people might say I'm a very frugal person. Yeah. But you know, for those that know me, for example, like when I was interning, the way that I was able to intern while still going to school, and not having to live at home was I lived under the stairs like Harry Potter.
Yes.
Right.
like quite literally under the
stairs. Literally, yeah, literally, literally. If you have watched Harry Potter, I lived for 2 years under the stairs. And so, yes, part of that is maybe a little bit of me being frugal, but really at that point in my life, it was the mechanism and maybe the sacrifice that I needed to do in order to then prioritize being able to intern at the church, do some hours as a custodian here, and then while I was still going to school as well, right? So I think that idea of creating margin and then maybe living below our means is a way that we can continue to leverage more for the kingdom. Yeah.
So I can attest to Pastor Jordan's frugality, if you will, now that he's used it himself, is that he actually, he wanted to save so badly that he ended up using his friend's toothpaste, I heard, or toothbrush, instead of buying your own.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'd love to try to say that maybe I read that in a Freed Up Financial book, budgeting tips, but that might have been more of a Jordan budgeting tip. I don't recommend that.
But I do think it's sometimes missed, the communication aspect between husband and wife, or your, if your children are older and involved in your household, like that conversation, right? I think it's super healthy to communicate well around money. And oftentimes, like you said, Mary, earlier, we shy away from it. I just want to put this in here. I've heard some people who interpret the Bible to say that a man shall be the head of the house, right? We call that in theology world complementarianism, right? And some people believe in egalitarianism. But for those, especially in premarital and stuff like that, counseling, I sometimes come across couples who believe what complementarianism means is that the man has a say to run the household however he wants to. And I think that's a terribly unhealthy and incorrect interpretation of what God is trying to say in the Bible. And so some people I've seen where the man should do everything budget related and decide what house to buy, what car to buy, and budget should be theirs, and then the wife shouldn't have any say. I think that really you can't really argue for that if you exegete scripture well and faithfully. So if you tend to be in that kind of a mindset, I would highly encourage you, come and have a conversation with us. I think there's a better and more fruitful way of leading finances in your home rather than making it such a one-sided affair. I do not think that's biblical. And I think communication around it as a family is tremendously important. If you are in a relationship with a spouse, I do think it has to be a conversation. It has to be a constant conversation sometimes. And I think you said it earlier, the budget becomes a tool now, and it becomes an accountability piece. I love that. Like, once we commit, like Sarah and I, we struggle to communicate around it at times too. The other day I was like, hey, is this really how much we spent on Christmas ornaments? And for her, it has a sentimental value. For me, it has none. So, like, we have a disagreement on the value of these ornaments. However, once we have a budget that we've agreed upon, then it becomes an accountability piece. Okay, hey, we said we would spend this much on things like this. Now we've exceeded it. So what would you like to do? Right? So it becomes a better conversation when you have a committed and agreed upon budget. And it becomes, like Jordan said, an accountability tool.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, you know, another piece to that is it also provides safe boundaries to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to our first point about maybe why we don't talk about money is because it can lead to conflict.
Yes.
Because people do have specific ways that maybe they were brought up by their families or specific views on finances, or or specific theological positions. When you establish that budget, it now does give you safe boundaries to be able to have that conversation and allow hopefully healthy conflict that leads to some sort of a resolution.
Yeah.
I just want to say this one last part of my little list there.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily fit into that flow because it's just, I think, prayer. So you know, the communication piece, obviously, between us, but prayer, saturating all of prayer, praying with, in this context, personal finances, is huge, right? So it's any part of that list, write it out, pray.
Yeah.
Use your budgeting tool, pray. Yes. Communication with your spouse or whoever, pray. Right. So just one other thing.
Great, great thing to share. Thank you. Mary, how about you and Phil? And are there any tools that you guys use?
This conversation has been a really interesting journey for us for a number of reasons. It's definitely been one of the topics we've had to discuss a lot and converse a lot about, not only because we came from families with very different ethos of everything, but also because when we got married, we were both so young. We were 21 and 23, and we didn't really know anything about anything, including finances. So it's definitely been a journey of learning and compromising and figuring things out. But very similar to Jordan, we kind of have a conceptual envelope system. Mm-hmm. And one way we have found that really helps us honor our finances and follow through on the values we have is to just automate everything. So I know some people like physically doing stuff because of the act of like bringing something somewhere or that sacrificially, but we just know ourselves well enough.
Sure.
And when online shopping is sometimes too easy, so things are just automated. Like if the account both our paychecks go into, if we've decided on where they're going and how much it's going, and it can just all go out immediately, that helps us steward things better.
Yep.
Because it's all happening and we can ensure that it's happening. And then another thing too that we've really had to realize is, as simple as it sounds, but you can't have it all. We can't be people that love to travel, love to eat, love cars, love how, like, we can't have it all. And so we spent a lot of time figuring out what we value most in terms of like leisure and pleasure as well. And for us, it's traveling. So we drive an older car and we share it and we don't eat out a lot. I mean, we eat good food, but we don't eat out a lot. But travel.
You being celiac.
Yeah, I know. I can't eat out anyway, so it helps. But the travel piece is a thing that we've agreed upon that we both really value. And you can see in our finances that that's where things are going to. But they're also not.
For you and Phil.
Yeah, and it's not going to our car. Even though we love our little Mazda 5, but we've been married almost 7 years now. And so it's definitely been a journey of learning.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. I think it's important for people to hear that even though we do this kind of as a living to do theology and how it applies and try to help other people with it, we also have our own struggles with it, right? And so I hope people don't feel so discouraged that like, oh man, maybe I'm not in a healthy spot right now. Maybe that whole envelope system will help. Don't feel discouraged. I hope you feel the confidence that God's Spirit is here to help you and God's church is here to help you. And we all need help. And going back, like sharing your personal financial practices with few people that you could really trust. I'm not saying you should like Facebook post all of this and here's my budget. What do you think? Let's go fight. No. Like, there's a wise way of doing this where if you have people who you trust to be God-honoring, godly people in your lives, maybe bring them in. Even to the point of like maybe opening up an Excel sheet and being just so bare with them. I've done that with a couple of my mentors where I literally, to every penny that I spent, including my, at that time, $8.99 Netflix account every month, like to that detail, hey, here's how I spend, here's how much I earn, hey, can you speak into my life in this area? And that to me had been tremendously helpful and encouraging that people would take their time to speak wisdom into my life in that way. So I think especially if you're a younger person just starting out, like you said, when you were first married, I think having those people are exceptionally helpful. But even if you're not young, I think it's nice to have people around you for accountability and support. The one thing that I want to add to what you guys have already said about personal finances, though, is this idea of being frugal. So Jordan says he's frugal, but he's actually not, right? Like, he saves in the things that are okay for him to compromise on. And then he knows where he really wants to spend. So you also go on good vacations and stuff. And it's not like you deprive your family of like all the joy and fun in life.
We used to. We now have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old.
That's true.
So I now use vacation liberally. We go on family adventures. They are different.
That's true. But I mean, I see you kind of even living in close proximity to you guys in personal lives, I see you guys actually learn to delight in the gifts that God's given you. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you guys are, you know, going out there and bitter and your families never get to enjoy any of the gifts that God's given you. But what I do notice is this idea that if you're always saving, and if that becomes almost an idol for you, then I've heard this from other Christian financial advisors, then you don't know how to be generous. Mm. And I've heard a Christian financial advisor on a radio show say that, like, you need to learn how to spend. All your life, you've done so well faithfully saving, and you have a great retirement. Can I ask you, what cruise are you going to take your wife on, you know, finally celebrating this moment? It's like, oh, did you book the cheapest cruise? Yeah. Can you afford so much more? Yeah. Well, yeah, because you've gotten used to being frugal, and that's become ingrained in who you are. And now I want you to learn how to spend and expand that a little bit, not just because I want you to be, you know, wasteful, but because I want you to learn to be generous. Hmm. It may not always be this way, but I do tend to notice this. If you're frugal to yourself, inevitably, in many, many cases, what you view to be generous is actually not really radically generous, because your scale of generosity had become so small. Hmm. Right? So to learn to expand that, I think, is important, because God doesn't call us to be like a very frugal person when it comes to helping other people. I think there is a radical generosity that God calls us to. We'll get to later the theology part of this. But I think in our personal practices, maybe we idolize saving so much in our culture, and we are so ashamed of being spenders. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not vouching for reckless spending, careless spending, or spending above your means and all that stuff. But I do think enjoying God's gift and delighting in it is totally biblical. And I do think learning to spend, to train our hearts to be generous and not hold on and to put all of our eggs in the basket of security, financial security, I think those things are important lessons for Christians to continue to explore as well.
Yeah, and on that, I think that that's, you know, the important one of the important elements of budgeting, once again, that ties in with stewardship, right? Because that's really at the heart of what you're driving at. The idea that a budget is a tool that then frees you up to then use what God is giving you for kingdom purposes, it goes back to that idea of boundaries as well, right? Yes. Like, you know, we've been talking about conceptual envelopes and stuff, but however you start when you write it out, and there's all sorts of different rules for it, like you're going to start with maybe a bit of a bigger picture, right? So there's like the 50-30-20 rule, yes, or the 50-20-30 rule, or for even keeping it even simpler, if you're not there yet, 80-20, for example, yeah, right? Where you just break things into natural categories. What are the needs essentials? What are the wants? And maybe guilt-free spending that you can focus on, and then saving and investments. And once you kind of map that out, and then you pray and you feel confident that, okay, with my mission and vision that God's calling me to, we feel comfortable, we're going to move forward with this plan, reviewing it seasonally, being open to how the Spirit mm-hmm. prompts and shifts things. What I find ultimately really helpful about that is it really forces you to consider what categories you place certain things in, and it helps you to pinpoint if you need to make changes to your budget. For example, the spending idea, yep, right? Like if so much of your money is going towards savings, that's way out of line with your budget, does that all of a sudden free you up to go, oh yeah, maybe like when Pastor Paul mentioned our church is sponsoring our refugee family, mm-hmm. man, like, yeah, Spirit's prompting me, I'm going to give to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all sorts of practical and powerful implications for when you establish that budget,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you quickly share your, remember when we went to Freed Up Financial class?
Yeah.
The one thing that you've taken away from,
yeah,
there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, once again, I know we've got other questions to tackle, but like, you know, for those of you listening, like there's so many practical resources out there, right? There's different people that are there as financial advisors, or there's workshops, right? So Paul's referring to Freed Up Financial, biblical Christian workshop. And so when we went through it, we were probably late 20s, early,
yeah,
30s.
Yeah, early 30s maybe. Yeah.
Kind of maybe right when we were married, yeah, or about to get married. Yeah. Anyway, I thought I was like a pretty good budgeter at that point in time. But one of the things that really kind of jumped out at me was one of the chapters on, like I said, defining these categories. And one of them was on gifts.
Yes.
Right? So, and I kind of thought, oh yeah, you know, I give my mom some Christmas presents and my dad's birthday, I send cards, all that.
But then this, you know, workshop said, okay, list out all the gifts that you spend over the year. And so I did. And wow, it blew me away how much money I didn't even think about was being diverted to all the different categories as gifts. And so that became a really important discussion point for me and my wife when we did get married, because, you know, potentially one of her love languages is gifts. And so that now, and it's not for me, right? It's, you know, you give me a gift, that's awesome, that's great. That's not going to be the thing that lights up my heart or anything, which means now we really do have to have a conversation about that, because surprisingly, it can become a really large portion of your annual budget.
Lots of nieces, nephews, cousins, friends. And I know you guys like to be generous. So then, that's a big item. And I know this is the same for you and Phil as well, Mary. And it is so for me and Sarah too. So definitely learning to track it and having those conversations. One of the first things we had to do as a married couple was we were sponsoring different children. We had DFN children and World Vision children and others.
Oh, no.
And as we start to like have these conversations, I'm like, okay, we're going to have to cut some of the giving here.
Devastating.
Devastating, but important conversations because, again, our concept at that time, especially, even now, but that time as our finances were tighter early, you know, early in our lives, getting married and having a child, we decided we need to live within our means. And if this giving is only because it makes us feel good and we're going into debt because we're doing so much of this and we're helping these people and buying gifts, they're all good things. But then now it's like, wait, there is this idea, though, that God has given me enough and I shouldn't need to go into debt to do his work. Unless, you know, different scenarios, we won't get into too much detail of that. But at that time, we thought it was wise for us to stop. And that was a difficult conversation, but we did. And these are things that we learned. One other thing about personal budgets that I did want to highlight was the relationship with time and money. Mary and I had heard, Mary actually found this podcast for me. As we were preparing for this, God and Money by Tim Mackey and
the Bible Project.
Yeah, the Bible Project. Yeah, John and Tim there. And it's just over an hour, well worth a listen. Oh my goodness, it's such a great, compelling story about these two guys who went to Harvard Business School and made a lot of money already before going to this school. And there they just started to do a research project where they learned, because they're Christians, the relationship between God and money, and they were convicted and they were challenged. And then eventually that changed the entire
trajectory of their lives, really.
So then, so listen to the story. One of the things that they talk about is this one of the guys is, I think he's the petroleum engineer. The reason he became a petroleum engineer, by the way, if you're listening to this, no offense to you petroleum engineers, I'm sure you guys are all smart and your jobs are super exciting. But the reason that this particular guy became that as his career was he went to school and he realized, oh, I want to make the most money I can with the least time spent. I don't want to be burnt out and not with my family. And so he put on a quadrant all the jobs and did like an analysis of time versus amount of money. And the best perfect ratio were two jobs, apparently at that time, at least in America, dentist and petroleum engineers. So he became, I think he worked for Shell, Chevron or something like that, and made tons of money. I don't want to, I'm not trying to say this is how we should determine our careers from now on, but I do think there is this sense of if there are jobs where you are making good money and then you get to buy time because you don't have to work as much as other jobs do, and that frees you up to do other things. It's kind of similar to what Pastor Jordan said about his internship experience where he had to kind of learn to live within his means if he wanted to take this opportunity on. I've actually met doctors and other people who make, I'm assuming, good money in our society. And they actually have carved out a career where they're not enslaved by their job. Unlike what people think, not all wealthy people are just, you know, slaving away and that's how they amass their wealth. I mean, some might be. But a lot of people actually have learned with their financial blessing that they could actually have more time, they could secure time, whether that's in the form of early retirement or whether that's in the form of having more flexibility. One of those things, I think it's just important for us to know, then how do you divert the things that you are blessed with to God's kingdom work? And I know doctors who actually go on missionary trips and stuff because they can afford a lot of time off. I know some people who have retired early and devoted their lives in serving their community, neighborhood, and church. And other people in their lives. It's just so cool to see the relationship between time and money. that when we talk about money, it's not really always just about money. Oftentimes it's in very close relationship with time. Mm-hmm. So for example, our other pastor, Pastor Jason and his wife, they've talked about this many times, but they've chosen when their kids were young for Julie not to go back to work full time. And in that scenario, they knew the trade-off that they couldn't drive a certain car or wear certain clothes or whatever if they decided to go into a single income. But then they decided the single income could afford them to do some amazing things for God's kingdom and for their family. And so they kind of chose that. And again, not advocating that you have to be single income to honor God or anything, or that you have to have a lot of time. But I think it's those creative conversations that we could be having as a community, as a family, and as individuals, where, man, it's not just about money. Money isn't the end-all be-all about our lives. How do we manage it so efficiently and so well that it frees up other things, like the savings account that Jordan talked about, or maybe an early retirement plan, or maybe a plan to bless people every year with your time by going and serving them in different places, or maybe it's your own neighborhood. Mm. Anyways, I just wanted to point that out because I think time and money in our culture, at least, is such an intricately correlated concept.
One more thing to add on to your one more thing. Yes. But in terms of this whole personal finance thing, I think another thing that we often forget is that seasons do change. And so Phil and I are in a new season now. We're expecting our first baby in January. Ooh. And oh my goodness, the startup costs for a baby. It's crazy. And it's obviously we were like, well, that's why I'm getting Paul's wife, Sarah, to help me because she knows all the stuff you actually need versus don't need. But so we've had to make some different decisions, and like for right now we have like a little bit less that's going to like our long-term saving because we need it now to help with the startup for our baby. But I think that, you know, in a certain world that could be a huge sense of anxiety or even shame for us that we have to switch these things, especially in terms of like what's going to our savings. But knowing that this is necessary, this is an investment, this is just a new season and a different season, has been a really good reminder to us, because we both, Phil and I, have different levels of anxiety around money, but it's been a really crucial conversation that we've been having recently.
Yes, good point. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, the next episode is going to be a continuation of this conversation, so be sure to catch that episode as well.